We have just entered a new year. This is the first day, or first month of the year. We're well into it now, of course. We're coming up soon to the Passover, which would be on the 14th day of the month, and that's this coming week. So I wanted to use this as an opportunity to revise, as it were, what our responsibility is. And I want to take two parables that Jesus gave and focus our attention on them to help us see a bigger picture. Two parables in question are very reflective of each other. One is in Matthew 22, while the other is in Luke 14. And I'm going to start with the one in Luke 14, though I've went and opened the wrong one, as you do. Some people think that these parables are the same parable, but in each gospel slightly differently recorded. But as we read coming up to when the parable was given, we see different circumstances. One happens in the temple, the other happens at a dinner. So there is total differences between the two. So they are given at different times, but they reflect the same concerns. The one we're looking at first is on Luke 14, and it starts in verse 16. So I'll just read through it here. Then he said to him, "A certain man gave a great supper and invited many, and sent his servants at supper time and said to those who were invited, 'Come, all things are now ready.' But they all with one accord began to make excuses. The first said to him, 'I just bought a piece of ground, I must go and see it. I asked that you have me excused.' Another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm going to test them. I ask that you have me excused.' Still another said, 'I've married a wife, and therefore I can't come.' So that servant came and reported these things to his master, and the master of the house became angry and said to the servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in here the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind.' And the servant said, 'Master, it is done as you commanded, and still there is room.' Then the master said to them, 'Go out into the hedgeways and the hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste of my supper.'" Now that we were reading was from Luke 14, 16 to 24. And that's the first of the parables that I want to look at. But I want to break it down a wee bit. Who do we think the parable is aimed at? Initially, if you go to theologians, they will say to you, well, it's reflective of the Jewish nation refusing to accept Christ and the salvation that had been offered to them. And therefore, the reason the parable then splits into who is invited is because the ones who initially refused were the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and all the leaders of religious law. In other words, the high and the mighty, the ones who were supposed to be righteous and holy. And therefore, when the master says, right, they're not going to get to taste this meal that I have made, go out and bring me in all the sick, the lame, the blind, and all the rest. This is often suggested to represent the poor among the people of Israel, who Jesus reached out to and touched. That they were invited, and suddenly these people who before were outcasts were suddenly made welcome to be acceptable into the kingdom of God. And there wasn't enough. That was the problem. When all of that had been done, when the church had been sent out to reach all these individuals all over the land of Israel, there wasn't enough people to fill the house. So the new order went out. And we see this as we go down through the book of Acts. We see how this played out and why, therefore, this thinking has been put across for this parable. And that is, it opened up to, first of all, the Samaritans, and then to the rest of the Gentile nations all over the world. In other words, go into the very hedgerows and compel them to come to my house, that my house might be filled. Here we have two very interesting comments that we have to bring up. The very last thing said here, I have said that none of those who were invited shall taste my supper. Now the ones who were invited were those who had been given the law. So anyone who was given the law were no longer invited to eat of that supper at that time, because it had been refused by their leaders, by their rulers, by their priests and rabbis. Therefore, God chose to push away from himself all who kept the law, using and giving an example of this parable at that time. Now, does that mean that the people that he called that were sick, maimed and all the rest weren't subject to the law? Well, of course they were Jews. But their entrance in wasn't based on their keeping of rules and regulations. It was now to be the same as was given to the Gentiles. Their belief had to be solely and completely on Jesus Christ. It was only through Jesus that they could be made right with God and be given eternal life. There was no other way available. So needless to say, when Jesus was telling these particular parables, and there are quite a number of them, and they all relate to the same principle and concept, he wasn't exactly endearing himself to the religious leaders of his day. In fact, they were already planning how to get rid of him, because this was causing problems. In the reading that we heard earlier, it was noted that they were very upset that they were listening to Jesus, that the people were listening to Jesus. And that was a very interesting thing, because the Pharisees and the rulers of religious law depended on the people's obedience. That was all they had. They said, God says, you do. That was it. And they maintained that. And that's how they controlled the masses. That's how they ensured their income. They insisted on tithing. They insisted in ensuring that the people give to the tiniest bit. Another parable Jesus told, it's not a parable. An observation Jesus made was in the temple when he was with his disciples. He was watching individuals given to the temple treasury. This was a custom. Every time you went to the temple, you brought a gift. And it was financial at this period in time. Okay? So they needed the financial gifts coming in on a regular thing. But what they had done was they had agreed among themselves there should be a minimum amount. And it consisted of what we would call 2 small coins. 2 small coins. The value of them was hardly worth talking about to the majority who would be throwing in their gifts. But Jesus had noticed that there was one woman there. She had wanted to come to the temple for some time. Doesn't say that in the story. But we know this because of how Jesus responds to her. He says, you see that little woman there? That small woman over there who's just throwing in a tuppence? to the treasurer? She has given more than all the rest of them put together. For they, out of their wealth, give what they wanted. But she, out of her extreme poverty, had to give all that she had. All that she had. Why was Jesus highlighting this to the disciples? Because he should see what they couldn't see. He could see that this woman's desire was to come before God in the temple and to say thank you. But to do that, you had to give a gift according to Jewish law and rules. You have to give a gift. So she couldn't come every week or every month. She had to wait until she had enough for the minimum payment. And when she had enough for the minimum payment, she came to the temple. That was her admission. And it was everything that she had. Her entire life was based upon this concept that if she wanted to worship God, she had to accumulate everything that she could. She had to withhold from herself and sacrifice in order to get two small coins, a minimum payment. Do you think Jesus was happy with that? Or do you think he was pointing it out to the disciples that this was unjust and wrong? Yes, we see and say that she gave more than anyone else. But the rest of the story, the rest of the concept of what Jesus is telling us here has to be looked at as well. Throughout many of the parables that Jesus was telling, he often spoke about change. He reminded people that things are not going to stay the way they are. He focused on the kingdom of heaven. And he said, in the kingdom, there will be mercy. In the kingdom, there will be justice. In the kingdom, there will be fair play. All these things he was telling the people. And he promised them that to get into the kingdom wasn't by keeping the law. It was by hearing him. This is the will of my Father. This is the work I've given. He has given for you to do. That you hear the one he sent. That was it. Do you realize what he said when he said that? It was read to us earlier there in John 6. What do we understand about that statement? Well, it means that every other thing that they had been told was no longer true. Everything else was no longer true. All you had to do was hear and obey Jesus. He was the bread from heaven. He was the one who was to come. He was the only way that you had access to the Father. Like I said, priests, Pharisees, rabbis, they didn't like Jesus. So it's very strange that we see that they do keep on inviting him to dinner. In fact, in Matthew, we're going to go to Matthew 22. We have another parable here that's being spoke about. Now, in Luke, Jesus had been invited to dinner. But in Matthew, he's speaking to the people in the temple. And he starts off by telling them quite a bit. If we just go to Matthew 21, verse 45, we see that what Jesus had been telling them was now that when the chief priests and the Pharisees heard his parables, they perceived he was speaking of them, and when they thought to lay hands on them, they feared the multitude because they took him for a prophet. Now we go into chapter 22. And Jesus answered and spoke again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call them who were invited to the wedding, but they weren't willing to come. Again, he sent out other servants saying, 'Tell them who are invited, see, I prepared my dinner, my oxen and fatted cattle are killed and all things are ready, come to the wedding.' But they made light of it and went their way, one to his own farm and another to his business, and the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully and even killed them. When the king heard about this, he was furious. He sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, burnt up their city." I want to stop there for a moment in the middle of the parable, because I want to look at what has actually happened. We need to take these little bits at a time and relate them sometimes with regard to what happens in history. The interesting bit here is the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son. Well, Jesus had declared that he was the Son of God and that the marriage was being prepared and it was being made ready. It was also customary, if you were to be invited to a banquet organized by a ruler, they would proclaim that they were going to have the banquet well in advance to the actual event happening. This is so that you could ensure you were free on the day. Do you understand? No other commitments would be allowed. So you've got time to plan, you've got time to prepare, because the king has requested your presence to celebrate. It should be the greatest honor you will ever receive. Yet Jesus is saying, but these subjects are saying, "Nah, it's not really something we want to attend. Not really available. Work to do. Other commitments." Some of them even ridiculed the servants, beat them up, and some were killed. So when the king heard what was happening, he did what any king worth his salt would do. He mobilized his army and he destroyed their city. 70 AD, that's exactly what happened at Jerusalem. God mobilized an army that destroyed the temple and in 135 raised the entire city of Jerusalem to the ground. So this is a prophetic warning that was given by Jesus at that time, because they rejected the offer made to them. But the parable now starts and looks at something totally different. He says, the wedding is still ready. The meal is still prepared. But those who were invited are not worthy. Therefore, go out into the highway, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding. So the servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both good and bad. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have a wedding garment. Now, this has caused a lot of problems to people over the years. Why did this man not have a wedding garment? And their immediate reaction, because they're not aware of the custom, is, well, if he was poor, he probably couldn't have afforded it. But they're not aware of the custom. The custom was, when you're invited to a wedding, you're supplied with your clothes. Everything is prepared for you. So what we're looking at here is an individual who would have been offered to be dressed appropriately for the wedding and said no. He said, No. I'm happy enough dressed as I am. When we think about this, we have to understand that what we are to be dressed in is the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And if we're dressed in the righteousness of Jesus Christ, then we are perfectly dressed to go anywhere God calls us to go. But this individual didn't feel that was necessary, because he was relying upon his own righteousness, his own ability, his own ability to keep the law. We're automatically reminded of another incident where Jesus met a young ruler who was very rich and said to Jesus, "What do I need to do to inherit eternal life?" So Jesus told him, "Everything Moses asked of you, do." He says, "I've done that since my youth. What else do I need to do?" And Jesus said, "Go, sell everything you have and come and follow me." Everything that you have, and come and follow me. And the young rich ruler wasn't able to do that. Why? Because he had a position of authority. He had provision that had been set up for him by his parents, and he inherited all of this, and he would be looked after for the rest of his life, and his children would be able to inherit all of this. And the concept of selling it, giving it all away, and going and follow a rabbi around the place didn't make much sense to him. And we can understand that, because every single one of us in some way or other have been faced with the same problem. We've been asked by God to do something, and we've gone, "That's tough. That's very tough. I'm not sure I can get away with that." And we don't realize that the offer was made to us to be dressed in wedding garments, and we chose not to. Now, I grant you, most of the time, God continually offers us the opportunity, and within the wedding feast scenario that we were looking at here, that also would have happened. Because the servants would have continued trying to get this individual to accept a wedding garment. Everybody else was accepting wedding garments. So this individual would have continually been given this opportunity until one fateful moment. And that's what we're going to read next. When the king came in, this is verse 11, chapter 22. When the king came in to see the guest, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, "Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding garment?" I don't think he used an Irish accent. That really helped. And the man's response, he was speechless. Because at the end of the day, he was now standing in front of the king. He was standing in judgment. There was nowhere else to turn. He had made his choice. He was getting no further opportunities. He was now standing before the king, and judgment was about to be made. And look at the judgment. Without this wedding garment, the king said to the servants, "Bind him hand and foot and cast him away into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." Why? Why are only a few chosen? Because we have free will. When you hear someone telling you about Jesus Christ, you have to decide whether or not you will believe them. When you are told that Jesus requires us to obey him, hear him, and do what he says, You have to make the decision as to whether or not you're going to do that. So you've received the call, you've received the invite, you can go to the wedding, but you have to be willing to accept the wedding garment. And that's your obedience in the first instance. You have to understand you have a responsibility to obey Him, Jesus Christ, in all things. There's another aspect that we need to look at, because it did cause a lot of bother previously. And I want to bring it to your attention, because we're going back to the account in Luke. So Luke 14, verse 23. So his master said, go into the country lanes and behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come so the house may be full. In most of the translations, the word urge is compel. The actual word that's used is force. In other words, make them come. But the difficulty we have with this is because there is a mistake in understanding with this. Because Jesus was not suggesting that the church were going to compel people to believe in Him. However, sadly, throughout history, that is how it has been understood. And people were compelled to the pains of death if they did not become Christian. But that was not what this intended. So what does it intend? What is God saying? Well, in this situation, the explanation is better understood by where they were to go to get these individuals. And they were to go to the lanes and byways, to the marketplace, to the shambles, to the crossroads. In other words, to the corner of the street. They were to go out into the public. And what would you have seen if you had went out into these places on a normal day-to-day basis in the Middle East? Even today, what would you see if you go out to the shambles, that is the marketplace, in Jerusalem or any of the other towns or cities at that area? You would see traders. How do the traders work there compared to how the traders work here? Do they suggest you come into their shop and have a wee look around and choose for yourself what you like? Or do they bring the item to you, present it as forcefully as they can to encourage you to take it because you really, really need this carpet? They were urging, compelling, forcing. And that's what's meant by this. When you bring this invitation to come to all these mass of people that you're going to give it to, you are to be persistent. You are to tell them how important it is. You are to demonstrate to them in every way you can that this is a life-changing opportunity that is being presented to them. You're to sell it to them based on your belief of what it consists of. Do you know, a salesman who drives the car he's selling is more effective than one who drives a different model. A salesman who believes in his product and uses it and knows that it's good finds he's not selling. He's merely inviting people to share his good fortune. And that's what we're invited to do. Because we have, if you like, a product that's unrepeatable. It's unique. We can offer people life eternal. We do not offer people wealth, prosperity, good health, or protection against harm. We offer them life eternal. It's totally different. So as you can see, both of these parables are very similar. They offered a command that God's kingdom will be filled with people who are willing to accept his offer of salvation through his Son, Jesus Christ. And the way they hear it is through us. We are the ones who are doing the representation on behalf of God. We are selling. So, should we all sign up to a nice, good sales pitch and learn how to do it right? Or should we simply tell them about the impact of knowing Jesus Christ has on our lives and find that they want the same too? Thank you.